In the Bible on your seat. May I welcome you to the third in this autumn series, Understanding the Times. And I'm going to read Matthew chapter 9, verse 35 to 38. So it'd be a great help if you could have that open. We're going to be looking at the verses very closely. So if you could turn to them, that would be helpful. Matthew 9, 35. And Jesus went throughout all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues and proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom, and healing every disease and every affliction. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion for them, because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore pray earnestly to the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest." Well, our series this autumn is entitled Understanding the Times. If we don't understand the times in which we live, we shall always be disorientated. In fact, as Christians, if we don't understand the times that we're in now, we will always be wrongly focused. We will direct our energies and desires inappropriately, and inevitably we will end up disillusioned. So far we've seen that they are times of deep conviction, because Jesus has come as God's King and he's demonstrated to us that he has all of God's authority. He claims at the end of the Gospel, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me." It's quite a claim. And through his own resurrection from the dead, and through his miracles and his teaching and his life, he demonstrates that he has all God's authority. He has come as God's King. But we've said not just conviction, but clear-headed conviction, because Jesus never promised to usher in all the benefits of his kingdom here and now. So ongoing sin, suffering, disease, sickness will continue until he returns. We must be clear-headed about that. If we don't get clear-headed about that, we will always end up disorientated and disillusioned. Last week we saw that there's time for what I called gut-wrenching compassion, something we feel right here, in our insides, gut-wrenching compassion. For we live in a time when our world is experiencing the impact of having rejected God. We see it in the great social issues of today. You can't have missed the deep concern in the media at the breakdown of family and the impact on children. You'll have heard the discussion today, this morning, on the Today programme, possibly, if you weren't already at your desk. But we've seen that the greatest concern that should cause us deepest compassion is the fact of people heading to death and then to judgment without being forgiven. And that's what chapters 8 and chapter 9 of Matthew is about, as Jesus steps into a world where the impact of rejecting God and therefore having to face to death and then judgment before our Creator causes Jesus deep compassion. I was speaking with a family friend on Saturday morning. He's now in his late 60s and he's been a friend of the family's for decades. And as we spoke, our conversation came round to death. He's not a Christian person. And I said to him, there can be nothing more awful, more horrifying, more terrible than to face God unforgiven after your death. And interestingly, we saw that as Jesus looks out on these vast crowds, rather than engaging in what I called finger-wagging moral high horsemanship, you know, the Daily Mail editor, "Oh, you naughty people," he was moved to deep compassion, something he felt inside. Time for clear-headed conviction, time for gut-wrenching compassion. This week, time for action. And the action we're talking about is that of urgent and sustained and committed prayer. But before we get down to that, I want us to see that it is harvest time. And the striking thing about these verses is Jesus' assumption. In verse 37, he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful." So here is Jesus' assumption that because he has come early to bring the forgiveness of sins, because Jesus is the good shepherd who has come to call the sheep of God's pasture under his safe and secure rule, because he is God's rescuing king, has come to offer forgiveness, therefore it is harvest time. By harvest, what Jesus means is that it is time to call people to follow him now, before it's too late. It's time to gather people into the safety of the storeroom, before the end comes. It is an agricultural picture, speaking of a spiritual reality. It is harvest time. And it's time for you to be gathered to safety. Frequently, the language of harvest in the Bible is used to speak about final judgment. You will notice that all the old hymns about harvest speak about final judgment. Those of you who have been subjected to a school assembly recently will have no doubt had to put up with cauliflowers fluffy and cabbages green, strawberries sweeter than any I've seen. Plums are red and apples are ripe or something. Broad beans sleep in their blankety bed. I got that last bit wrong. Sort of nonsense, really. Well, it's true. But we've just sung one of the great old hymns from somebody who understood the times. Just look at it. Verse 2. All the world is God's own field, harvest for his praise to yield. Wheat and weeds together sown, here for joy and sorrow grown. First the blade, then the ear, then the full corn shall appear. Lord of harvest, grant that we wholesome grain and pure may be. For the Lord our God shall come and shall bring our harvest home. And so on. Here in these verses, the harvest being spoken of is the harvest of bringing people home now to safety under the rule of God. And therefore, according to Jesus, the time has come to proclaim boldly that the king has arrived, that the king commands all people everywhere to turn back to God, to receive his forgiveness, and to be brought into the storeroom of safety. The time has come to declare to the city that all who reject the loving rule of Jesus will face his judgment. And the time has come to declare to the city that forgiveness is available. It's harvest time. But did you notice the striking thing in verse 37, about how Jesus describes the harvest? And I want us to look at the fourth word very closely, because I think that challenges most of the way we think if we're Christian. Jesus said the harvest is plentiful. Do you see it? I suspect that many of us need to have our thinking changed at this point. My fear is that we have got into a bad habit of thinking that there is no harvest, in other words, of disbelieving Jesus. I think many of us think that the harvest is poor here in the city, or that the harvest is minimal here in the city, that it's a light year in terms of harvest, that the harvest is scarce and sparse. Jesus says the harvest is plentiful. I wonder when the last time was that we looked on the southeast of England with the eyes of Jesus. We can't say that Jesus is simply speaking here about one part of Galilee in the first century, that the harvest was plentiful there in first century Palestine, but that here in the southeast of England in 2006 somehow the harvest is minimal. For by the end of chapter 10, Jesus is speaking to all his disciples. He's using the language of everyone and whoever, so that the ideas of chapter 9 and 10 are universal. The harvest is plentiful. By the end of the gospel, Jesus commands that all authority in heaven and earth has been given to me. Go therefore and make disciples of all nations. The assumption is that it's harvest time, and the harvest is plentiful. And earlier in chapter 8, when Jesus talked about heaven, he said that many will come from east and west to the feast in the kingdom of heaven. The harvest is plentiful. So the understanding of Jesus, do you note from verse 27, if you look down it again, is that there's just one thing that is short, that is preventing the harvest, and that is, verse 27, the labourers are few. It's not the harvest that is lacking, it's the labourers that are in short supply. So this is a great time of year, isn't it, for us to be speaking about these verses. I was talking to one of you, I was just wondering if you're here this morning, an insurance broker who dabbles in farming down in Kent. I think it's that way round, not a farmer down in Kent who dabbles in insurance up here in the city, but it may just be either way. Anyway, it doesn't really matter. And you said to me, it's a great apple harvest this year. It is. I don't know if you've been out in the country recently. Certainly down in Cornwall, where my family come from, it's a bumper year. We pruned the trees in our little farm orchard 2 years ago. Last year was a sparse year. This year, the branches are so heavily laden that the apples are growing in the grass. Jesus says, take that picture and think of your office. Here then is an exercise for us to do. As you head back into the office, I mean, most of us are working now in these open plan offices. As you get to the door of your office, say you're a trader, and you look out on this vast trading floor, think of the apple orchards of Kent. The harvest is plentiful. You insurance worker, as you next go on to the floors of Lloyd's, as you go up those escalators and come to the first or second floor, and you look out on all these desks with these hundreds of people milling around just before the 1 o'clock close and the long lunch hour. Look out on them. Think of the Kent orchard. The harvest is, says Jesus, plentiful. Think of the people you travel in to work with, or those at the golf club at the weekend, or your own family, or the corner shop where you buy your paper, or the men and women in the canteen, or the new graduates who have just joined your firm. The harvest is plentiful. In fact, I thought it wouldn't be a bad thing, would it, for us to stand where, as we stand at the entrance or on London Bridge, we see all the people swarming across, and just to sing to ourselves this hymn, come, you thankful people, come, raise the song of harvest home. Fruit and crops gathered in, safe before the storm begins. It's harvest time, and says Jesus, the harvest is plentiful. The shortage is not in the harvest, the shortage is in the workforce, which helps us to understand why there's been such a decline in the last 50 years in church attendance in this country. I don't know if you heard again the Today program yesterday, as they were speaking about the decline in church numbers and how it's just slowing down. Nobody mentioned the real reason for the shortage. Why has there been a decline? Well, according to Jesus, because there's been a lack of labourers. That's why there's been a shortage. I stumbled across this book in my bookshelf again this week. It's a great book by a famous Christian worker, R.A. Torrey, from the end of the 19th century. And it's all about how to be engaged in Christian work. And it's written for paid Christian workers and unpaid alike. He states that very clearly at the front. And he says, where should we do Christian work? On the streets, in the parks and other resorts, on a walk or on a ride, at the place of business, on cars and boats, in prison hospitals and other public institutions. So not just the one person who I know really well in the office. Not just the one person in our neighbourhood who I've managed to make a really good friendship with. No, it's harvest time, and the harvest is plentiful, and we are to look on our place of work, the southeast of England, with the eyes of Jesus. Secondly, it's prayer time. I want to ask us to do the first now of two rather teenage exercises, and I hope you'll forgive me for this. I think it might just be helpful to make the point. I want to ask you, if you can do this with the fingers you have attached to your hands, to cover over verse 38 after the word therefore. I have telegraph poles on the end of my hands, and therefore I find it quite difficult, but I can just about do it. And I want us to look at verse 37 and see how it flows, and how we might finish it. The harvest is plentiful, but the labourers are few, therefore. I wonder how you might finish that. Therefore set up a theological college. Therefore set up an evangelism training course so that somebody can be trained to do it. Therefore get out your checkbook and write out a check to pay for someone to be set aside to do the harvesting. Not me. Therefore establish a program in your church to train harvesters. Now, Jesus gathered all his disciples together in verse 37, and he said, look, if you have any compassion, if you are godly in any sense, and you look out on the world the way I do and see them heading towards death and then God's judgment, if you have any compassion, you will see that the harvest is plentiful. The laborers are few, therefore pray. And the word Jesus uses for prayer is a word for urgent, sustained, and energetic action. It is the beseech word. Hence, pray earnestly. Frequently translated, plead. I went back into the Psalms this morning to look it up, and as I did, as you do that, you will find, with my voice I cry out to the Lord, with my voice I plead. That's the word. It's used to speak of desiring, or longing, or pleading for something that I need. It is harvest time. It is prayer time. And therefore I want to talk for a moment or two about prayerfulness here in the city. Over the summer at the Partnership Summer School, Christopher Ashe very helpfully described prayer like this. He said, Christian prayer is not done from the comfortable armchair of the contemplative. Christian prayer is done from the edge of a hard seat, straining forward to the promises of God. It's God's harvest. He is in charge. We can't force his hand or dictate conditions, but we can come to him on the edge of a hard seat, if you like, and plead with him out of compassion. Lord, look at the millions in the southeast who do not know you. You are full of compassion and steadfast love. Lord, please, will you raise up laborers? You probably heard me say, you know, 350,000 people within the square mile. We would love to see just 10% of the 350,000 people safe in the storeroom, if you like, at God's harvest. Imagine 35,000 men and women heading out from the city every evening, going abroad, doing business with clients around the world. Just imagine the impact of 35,000 people who were laborers. Where will it begin? On our knees, on the edge of a hard seat. And therefore I want to talk very briefly about our diaries. When was the last time that any of us actually blocked out half an hour to pray for labourers in the harvest field, I wonder? Oh, we very happily block out a morning for a round of golf. We're happy to watch for an evening Arsenal thrash Manchester United. Very happy. We're willing to spend a day at Lord's or following Formula One. Mark tells us, rising very early in the morning while it was still dark, Jesus departed and went to a desolate place. There he prayed. Jesus needed to pray. How odd that we might not. Luke tells us, great crowds gathered to hear Jesus and to be healed, but he would withdraw to desolate places to pray. How strange for a disciple to think that Jesus needed to pray and we don't. Matthew tells us, after he had dismissed the crowd, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. Surely the person was right who said, if we are too busy to pray, we are too busy. Well, there are all sorts of opportunities to join with others to pray mentioned on the sheet there. And I would encourage you, it's the beginning of a year for many of us, to go through our diaries and say, when am I going to pray? You know, you have to diarize things, at least I do in London, otherwise they just don't happen. To go through the year's diary and to diarize it. This is an appointment. I'm going to pray earnestly that the Lord will have mercy on the city and raise up laborers. I said last week that it's gut-wrenching compassion. And you know, last week I was thinking of using an illustration because our family had just watched Ring of Bright Water. That's what happens when you have little children in your family, you have to watch these. You remember Ring of Bright Water? Tarka the otter gets clubbed at the end with a spade. You remember that? Tears. Yes, we had tears. Buckets of tears. Of course we had tears, because by that time Tarka had become really rather a friend. But of course it would have been an entirely inappropriate illustration of the compassion of Jesus. Because Jesus doesn't just feel something deep in here and then move on to the next thing. Jesus isn't just sort of like talking about a kind of compassion that watches the telly and sees somebody starving millions of miles away and then goes on to the next item. The compassion of Jesus Christ moves into action. And the action is urgent prayer. As a priority. More important than everything else. If he needed to do it, it would be most odd if we didn't. Well, we haven't got time for the last of our teenage exercises, you'll be glad to hear, but I want you to note what Jesus prays for in verse 38. Pray earnestly to the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers. And that word laborer is not talking about full-time paid Christians like the bloke in the pulpit. It's talking about all of us. And Jesus is praying that laborers will be sent out, and the word laborer is the word for manual worker. And I was thinking of saying, think of, you know, the classic English worker stripped to the waist at the roadside and hacking away with his pick. But of course that probably wouldn't be quite appropriate, especially the church manager said he spent 2 hours yesterday morning watching 7 laborers standing by a hole and looking inside and doing nothing. So think of the Polish worker stripped to the waist. Or the Rank film with that guy, you know, with a great big thing, sweat dripping down him. The laborer. That's, or think of the trader with his eyes fixed on the desk in rapt attention, sweating away from 6 a.m. till 6 p.m. Pray for laborers. And pray that the Lord of the harvest, and I say chuck out time, because that word send out is throw out, evict. That God, the Lord of the harvest, in his compassion, will evict hard-working laborers into the harvest field. You and me. With such a compulsion of the gospel that people need to hear the glorious news of the death of Jesus Christ and his love for them, that we cannot but go out and labor. A word of warning. Having asked his disciples to pray, Jesus then sends them. And next week we're going to begin to look at the terms and conditions of being a labourer in God's harvest field, so that we're better equipped. We understand the times and the terms and the conditions. But for today, it is harvest time. It is prayer time. And I would encourage us to get out our diaries and to encourage one over lunch. When are we going to pray? Come and join us on a Tuesday morning, if that would help. Let's pray together. Father, forgive our unbelief and have mercy that so often we've just got discouraged and disheartened. And we so often look out on the harvest as if it's very, very sparse. We ask that by your Spirit you would give to us faith, trust in your word. And we do pray that you would compel men and women to go out as laborers into the harvest field. We pray that it would be your work, not something that is driven by men, but something that is driven by your Spirit. And that across this city there would be men and women hard at work in the harvest field. Please, Lord, move us to pray and give us the courage and the conviction and the stickability to do it. For your name's sake. Amen.